Welcome back to another episode of the Tread Lightly podcast. We are so excited to be with you today. I am co-host and running coach Laura of Laura Norris Running.
And I'm your co-host and running coach Amanda Brooks of Run to the Finish. So treaders, I'm going to start calling you treaders. We'll see.
I like that.
Yeah, we'll test it out. We're going to ask a little favor of you. We are coming near the end of season one, and it's going to be really, really helpful for us if you will take 30 seconds, drop over to @treadlightlyrunning on Instagram. Let us know things like, do you like the length of episodes? Where are you listening to these? What else do you want to hear about that we haven't covered? Because we want to make sure that season two is just as beneficial. We were talking about ideas like potentially interviewing other running coaches, but if you don't want to hear that, we're not going to do it. So 30 seconds of your time to make sure you keep getting what you want and we can keep being even better for you.
Yes. And thank you already to those of you who have subscribed, rated, review. If you haven't, we would absolutely appreciate it if you did that. Now, today we have a listener question from @BenelouFisAccount. Do you want to read it?
Yes. So I love this question. It says, I am running a pancake flat marathon in 6 weeks attempting to qualify for Boston. I live in an area that's quite hilly. My standard easy routes range from 50 to 90 feet of climbing per mile. So the basic question is, since the marathon is so flat, would it behoove me to focus on flatter routes in the last 6 weeks or do easy runs with a lot of climbing and only do the quality work on flatter routes?
I like this question a lot because I think it gets to the principle of specificity with marathon training. And if you listen back to our last episode on muscle cramps, I think there's actually something here related to that because the more specific you can get, the less overuse the course has on your body on race day. So we think, oh, a flat marathon is super easy, and it is, but it is also a lot of repetitive movement to your muscles without much variation. So you actually begin to feel like you're overusing certain muscles a ton by the end. So this question was sent to like my Instagram account, and what I told them was, yes, focus more on flatter routes, especially for your long runs and your quality workouts. If for your easy runs, it just makes more sense to go out the door and run in the hilly area, that's great. It's the long runs and the marathon pace workouts, et cetera, that we really care about. What would you say?
I love that people really, really like to debate this with me, honestly, because it's one of my first recommendations for anyone who is training for Chicago is that you need to get in long runs that are flat. And it's not because I want you to stop running hills. I want you to do hill repeats early on. I want you to keep doing your hilly, easy runs. But it is very, very different. Having lived and trained in Florida and then coming to Colorado, I can tell you it's just super different. You don't realize that when you're on a long marathon route that doesn't have rolling hills, you aren't given the chance to switch up which muscle is working. So like you said, there's almost this overuse because your body isn't used to just being in that same like set of muscles for that full duration of time. So there's a massive benefit to going out and getting your long runs in so that your muscles are just used to exactly how that feels.
Yeah, absolutely. And for some of my athletes who don't have any flat options where they live and they're training for something like Chicago, I'll actually have them do some workouts or long runs on the treadmill just to get in that flat stimulus. And I know some people get really weird about using a treadmill for marathon paced long runs, but it paid dividends for them in the race.
Yep, agree. Like, we got to figure out how to make it happen and worry less about the where sometimes.
Yes.
Okay. I'm excited about today's topic because I always like talking to our master's runners. But one of the questions we had gotten a few times is sort of, all right, how do I start running after age 40? Like, what needs to be different? What do I need to look at? And for me, one of the first things I actually like to think about is I want you to stop looking at your age as a disadvantage. That tends to be like our natural, like, whew, can I start this after 40? But I think there's a lot of benefits to becoming a runner at that point in life. You've actually done more hard things. You've experienced more hard things. And so when you get out on a run and it's difficult, it's a lot easier to kind of push through that mentally because you're like, I don't know, I've done other stuff that wasn't great. You probably actually know how your body feels a little bit better. And maybe even most importantly, there's less ego driving you. So we don't as often fall into some of the traps of thinking that every run should be faster than the last run, because you're just out there sort of seeing what you can do.
Yes. And I think there's the benefit, like, yes, recovery is harder when you're older, but I think that's actually beneficial because you have to think about it right away. We see so many people who start running in like their teens or 20s who just go hard every run, can run 6 days a week from the start, and they get, you know, stress fracture or something really quickly because that catches up with them. After 40, you already have more, I mean, your prefrontal cortex is a little bit more formed, but you also know to respect your body's recovery, and that helps you establish healthy training habits.
Yes. Oh, I love that too. I think another thing that I just sort of enjoyed finding out is that it's really never too late to get the benefits of starting to exercise. So even those who increased physical activity during midlife, so having gone from being very inactive, had a 32 to 35% lower risk of mortality. And that's just at 75 minutes per week. So that's not even like you needing to take on marathon training. This is just you sort of starting to have a little bit of that intense exercise. So that was 75 minutes of intensity, or I think 150 minutes if you're mostly walking right now. So that's pretty awesome too.
That is really awesome. Like that's a big statistically significant reduction of risk.
So we've said all these great things about why you should start, but why is it that things actually feel harder now that you're in your 40s and trying to start something new?
Yeah. So part of it is hormonal, especially for our female athletes. We had some episodes a while back on perimenopause and running during that time. And for those female athletes, like, your estrogen is dropping. It might disrupt sleep. It might affect your recovery rate, how your body feels. It might cause achiness. And so if you're starting during that time, it's just an extra consideration and like confounding variable in how you feel. You might wonder sometimes, am I sore from running or am I sore from my changing hormone levels? While male athletes don't see hormonal changes as much after 40, they still might. And also, when you age, it takes time for your body to adapt. I mean, it takes time for anyone's body to adapt, but that can happen on slightly longer time horizons than it can when you're 20 and you recover super quickly and respond super quickly to stimuluses. And then there also might be, like, if you're a person who was active in high school and college, took time off and are starting running now, it is a mental recalibration of your fitness now versus what you used to do as a collegiate soccer player.
I think it's so, so easy to slip into that, oh, but this is what I used to be able to do mindset. Even I think finally this year, my husband got out of that because he takes on running only during the winter when he's not biking, and he was a sprinter. And so this has been like the first year where I've seen him just kind of go, huh, yeah, that is just not what I do now. I need to actually like build this slow and steady so that I feel good when I do it. One of the other things I definitely see is that when we first start, you might just be going too hard. So we're excited. We've got a new plan. We're gonna start running, but maybe we haven't really done any of the prep or the buildup. So you may need to be doing, you know, just some walking and then some run walking and then some running. And I think one of the things that could help with that initially is kind of getting into the right mindset, figuring out what you actually want from this running. So is your goal to sign up for a race? Is that what got you excited? Or are you just like, you know what? It would be nice if I could run a few days a week and stay fit. Like, both are fine, but they might help shift you a little bit into finding the progression that's going to feel better.
Yes, absolutely. And I feel like another mindset obstacle to work past when starting out after 40 is not comparing yourself to your peers who have been running for 5, 10, 15 years. So I'm sure you have this also. Like, I have some people in their 40s and 50s who are absolutely crushing it. They're running PRs, they're qualifying for Boston, they're placing on the podium at races. And that can be a rough comparison trap for someone who is like, well, I'm 42 and my best friend is qualifying for Boston all the time. But for me, what should I expect? Should I be like them right away? And just, I think a really good reminder is to think about how long they were running before they got to where they are.
Ooh, I do think that's so good. You're right. I kind of forget about that comparison, but I think that happens a ton. That's a great one. So if I had to give you kind of my where to start step one, you've probably heard people talk about easy runs and we'll kind of describe that. But what I actually like to see people, and this is even people we are coaching do, is I like to see you start with power walks. I love it when you can get to the point where you're doing 3 miles at roughly a 15-minute pace per mile. So that is like an intentional walk. You're swinging your arms. You're not out for a stroll. So right now, if you went out for a walk and it's like 20 minutes, that's fine. That's where you're at right now. But if you went to do run walk, it might be fairly uncomfortable. If we can get you to build up to that power walk and then transition to run walk, it's incredible how much easier run walk feels, how much more enjoyable it feels. And then that allows us to actually build up into that steady running. Because I know a lot of you have the goal of like, well, I want to run 1 mile without walking. So it's kind of allowing yourself to have that progression. And I think that progression, one, gives you a lot of little things to celebrate along the way. And two, keeps you from sort of getting frustrated and burnt out because it feels just almost overwhelmingly hard if you try to just dive in beyond a point where you're actually at.
I absolutely agree with that. I always encourage walking first before run walking. It also establishes the habit because it can be really easy to go for those first few runs and be like, this is so hard, and just let that hardness be a barrier before you establish the habit. As if you start with walking, it's easier to cultivate the habit. There's a lower barrier there.
The other thing that we're looking at here is first we're starting with that walking, then the run walk, then easy runs. And in all of those, we're trying to get you that foundation. So this is helping to sort of build your endurance, but also when we're doing a little bit more volume to our week, so you're now going out and, you know, walking every other day, we want to make sure that we aren't super stressing your body. So when we're in our 40s, 50s, 60s, and our hormones are up and down or have already fallen off, we have to pay a little bit more attention to cortisol. And cortisol is not the enemy or the devil, as it sometimes sort of seems on social media. But what can happen is that your body feels a little more stressed by being pushed too hard because it doesn't have the estrogen, the estradiol, the progesterone to balance it like it did before. So if you go in and you're immediately like, no, I'm just going to run straight through, and that means your heart rate is at 170 every time you run, your body is just in a super stressed out state. And that's going to be harder to maintain and probably cause you to feel more fatigue. And it's just not really that enjoyable.
It's not. And also, like, if you're starting to run at 40, even if you walked first, your musculoskeletal system is going to have to adapt. And chances are it's going to take a little bit longer for it to adapt than, say, if you were 20, just because we naturally lose lean muscle tissue with age. Our bone density can be affected, especially if we're going into perimenopause. And so you need to start with easy runs, even with the run walk, because you need to adapt your musculoskeletal system to that loading. And it takes longer for your musculoskeletal system to adapt than your cardiorespiratory system. So runs are going to probably feel easier on your lungs than you think, but you still need to slow down for the sake of your bones and muscles.
Great point. And another, there was some great research in clinical biomechanics, even, that was a reminder that as we age, our mobility, our tissue elasticity, all of that can take a hit. And so when you don't have quite the same mobility that you used to, your movement patterns and running may just not feel quite as fluid. And so that can enhance our injury risk. And one of the things that we can do to help is a warm up. I laugh because if you're new here, that doesn't sound that crazy. But if you're not new, I talk about the warm up so much, it's probably going to be on my tombstone.
But it's so important. Like, I mean, we talk about the differences between 20 and 40. At 20, maybe you can get away with your warm up. You should still do your warm up, though, if you're listening to this and you are 20. But when you're older, like, you need to take that time to elevate your muscle temperature, to slightly raise your heart rate, to lubricate your joints, because otherwise your injury risk is going to be that much higher when you go into these run walks or easy runs.
If you're not sure where to start with a warm-up, we can 100% link to one in the show notes, but also a few easy things you can do. You can do some lunges. You can do some leg swings, you can do some air squats, you can do glute bridges, and then you can even just like do easy walking for 10 minutes or so before you start running. And this is especially, I think, beneficial if you're running in the morning. So overnight, your body has gotten a little bit dehydrated. So this gives you time, sometimes even just during your warm-up, to keep sipping any sort of hydration. We want to make sure those joints are fully hydrated as much as we can. And just gives also like your heart rate and everything a chance to kind of get geared up and ready to go.
Yes. And during that time when you're doing your warm-up, especially if in the morning, if you haven't eaten for 3 hours, have a pre-run snack. It's very beneficial for keeping cortisol controlled and for different hormonal responses. It's going to help reduce your injury risk. And it's, even if you don't technically quote unquote need it for a 30-minute run walk, it's building a habit so that when it does come to the point that you're doing runs where you do need that easily available carbohydrate before, your gut is trained to taking it. And it doesn't have to be something big, like have an applesauce pouch or a banana or a couple of graham crackers. Just build that habit now.
Yes. And if you're having some questions about should run walk look like anything specific, there are a million variations on it. So some people run for 30 seconds, walk for 30 seconds, and that's where they are. And other people are running for 5 minutes, walking for 30 seconds. What we're looking for is we're trying to keep your heart rate from getting super high, like we mentioned earlier. And so if you find that, okay, if I do run for 2 minutes, walk for 30 seconds, man, my heart rate is still, when I try to run, it's staying in the 160s, we might take your run portion down a little bit. Or can you really focus during that run portion on making sure you're not trying to sprint it, but just keeping it like a nice, easy effort and thinking about, well, if someone was next to me, could I answer them with a full sentence? And if the answer is no, all I could say is yes or no. Then you're doing your run portion a little bit too hard. Maybe we need to go back and work on the power walking. But I don't think there's really like a, I've seen all the different things of like, if this is your pace, you should do these intervals. And I would say even with our athletes, it's all over the place. We're trying to figure out what feels good for you.
Oh yeah. Like it really is all over the place. Like I have some athletes in their advanced years who do the like 45, 30 seconds. I have some who do like 30 seconds every like mile. It's going to really vary. And it might be one way that you progress early on is start with the shorter ones and work on gradually building them longer. But it's also okay if you find a run-walk interval combination that feels great for you and you just stick there for a while. Like, unless continuous running is a goal, there's no reason that you have to do it. You are still a runner.
A million percent. Okay. I feel like I could talk about just the running portion, but we have to say this. You have to strength train. At this point, every single one of our athletes is required to do strength training, and especially if you're starting after 40. So we know that you can be losing 3 to 8% of muscle per year, and that actually starts at age 30, but it progresses more quickly as we get older. So unless you're doing something about it, all of that muscle loss is going to make it harder for you to run. It's going to make it harder for you to build endurance, and it's going to make it a lot more possible that you're going to get injured. And then someone will tell you something stupid like, "See, I told you we shouldn't run at our age."
It's very true though. And it's like one of those things, I think when you're starting out, it can be a good opportunity to begin even like body weight strength training, because you're probably starting with 3 days of running or run walking. So that's naturally then an easy way to fill 2 more days with strength, build that habit earlier so that when you do build up to maybe running 4, 5, however many days, you are adapted to that strength and know how to keep it in your schedule.
Yes. So one of the other things that's interesting is 100%, I want you to start where you're at. So if you haven't been doing anything, body weight is how you're going to learn correct form, how we're actually going to get things like moving in the right direction. But as we age, all of the signals that tell our body we need to grow muscle are actually weaker. So for you to end up getting more results, we need you to keep progressing. So it's going to take more consistency, and it's going to take progression. So if you're at the point at some point where you can do, say, 5 push-ups on your knees, but you never progress to trying to do the full push-up, it's not going to keep benefiting you. So we have to get you to slowly start incorporating weights, and then we have to get you to slowly increase how much you're lifting.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, this is slow over the course of like months, not days or weeks, but I agree, like, especially in terms of like neural system stuff and muscle recruitment and all that neuromuscular stuff that we do want to still think about at 40, in addition to all the muscle and bone benefits, you probably eventually want to build up to doing lower reps, heavier weights. But before you do that, you have to learn form. You probably have to go through some like hypertrophy phases, all this stuff to get to that point. Now, for someone who's strength training and stuff, how many days would you recommend that they do in addition to running?
Yeah, I think like you said, if I can get you to start out with 2 days a week, I'm super thrilled with that. At some point, if you're like, you know what, I really am excited to actually build a little bit more muscle, and I can tell that's going to make a difference in how I feel, then we may start looking at like, well, how can we get into a little bit more of a split routine where we have an upper, a lower, and a full body day, or things like that. So I think one of the big things is sort of figuring out, am I lifting heavy enough? And this is a little bit of a tricky one for some folks, but if you've been at a point where you could consistently use a weight and do 3 rounds of 15 reps, and it doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but you can do 3 rounds of 15 reps. That's a very endurance sort of focused lifting. And so what I would actually have you do, or have one of my athletes do, is pick up a weight that's probably almost double what you were doing and see if you can get through 5 reps. And if you're like, nah, technically, like, when I really focused, I could get to 8 reps. Then the next round, I'm going to have you go even a little bit heavier. And if you're at the point where you're like, "Ooh, I can only do 3 reps. Okay, now we're going to back off just a tad." But what I find is that sometimes we have to push you way outside your comfort zone to kind of realize that, oh gosh, I could actually lift quite a bit heavier than I thought I could. And start with something like your squat or something like that. So maybe not something as intense as a shoulder raise, but something where you know you have really good control of the weight and your movement.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, I think it sometimes just takes overcoming things outside of our comfort zone. And it's when you're doing that, it is okay if you are sore afterwards. We don't want to be sore all the time, but there are going to be times inevitably where we are sore, and it's okay if you go into your next run after that when you're sore. Now, one thing that's going to help that soreness and it's going to help you build muscle is to make sure you're getting enough protein. And this is extra important for people in their 40s and beyond because your protein needs are probably higher. There was a 2012 study in the British Journal of Nutrition that suggested that masters athletes probably need up to 40 grams of protein after a workout versus the typically recommended 20 to 30 grams. And 40 grams is a lot. That takes a lot of like deliberate inclusion of protein after a workout.
Ooh, I don't think I'm hitting 40 grams. So now I'm curious to see if I started doing that, what that might change. I'm aiming like usually to get about 30, and boy, even getting 30 is like, I gotta really plan some things out to make it happen.
Oh yeah. Like I can't get it 30 after a workout unless I use a protein powder, which, you know, are okay to use as a master's athlete as long as you don't have kidney issues.
Yep. 100%. I have to lean on some of those things post-workout. Which, speaking of that, recovery, one of the things I like is sort of the mental shift of now thinking of recovery as part of training. So instead of just calling it a rest day or an off day, I think if we say this is a recovery day, that sort of helps remind you like this day has a purpose and it is to ensure that you feel good for the next thing you're doing. And if you're in that phase right now where you're just trying to make this a habit, what I really like to have people do is even on their recovery day, show up for your workout at the same time that you have every other day and do some foam rolling, do some stretching, do something, do a light walk if that feels good. But that can help sort of keep the habit going. So a lot of the times people will get into a run streak mostly because it's helping them build a habit, but I really, really don't like them. And so instead, I just want you to think of it as a little bit of a movement habit. And so cool, on my recovery day, this is the type of movement I'm doing that's specific to recovery.
Yeah, that's great advice. And typically, I'm curious to see what you recommend, but typically I recommend if we're starting to run after 40, we have 2 days per week to start that are recovery days. And again, maybe you're walking, foam rolling, or doing some gentle yoga if that feels good, meditating. But usually I kind of find like 3 days of running to start, 2 days of strength, and then those two rest days. And again, you might look at some of your peers who have been doing this for decades and they only need one rest day per week, but you're in a different phase. Your recovery needs are different because you're trying to adapt your musculoskeletal system. It really, really makes a difference, I think. What do you recommend with rest days?
I agree with that. I like sort of that cadence. Usually for a lot of folks, it means you're kind of running every other day and we've got plenty of time between workouts. So I think that's a really great place to be.
Awesome. The next thing I would recommend, and this comes about 4 to 6 months, maybe even more, depending on your physiology, after you start running. But I think that because we can lose VO2 max so much as we age, that uphill strides have benefits for people starting after 40. And again, you want to probably be running about 6 months minimum before you incorporate these, because if you do them too soon, you are likely to pull a muscle. But uphill strides are safer than flat ground strides because of your biomechanics going up the hill and how the pace is kind of capped by the fact that you're fighting against gravity, so you don't have as much sheer biomechanical output. But you can begin with just like 2 to 4 reps of like 15 seconds fast up a hill and then walk back down. And that might not seem like a lot, but it's really going to help begin to tax your upper end aerobic capacity without stressing your joints too much.
I think the other thing I would say is hills in general. So it's really easy. All of us have fallen into this at some point that you start to realize, well, I'm a little bit faster when I don't do that specific route that has hills in it. And so what I want to encourage you to do is to do the hills anyways. And if you just have to walk the entire hill and there's no running and you're a little bit slower, you will be amazed at how much it's going to help you overall. And what's really fun is if you find a route consistently and you keep doing it and doing it, you slowly start to see over time that, gosh, I'm going up more of that hill before my heart rate is going up. Or, gosh, I could only walk this hill before. Now I'm able to do my run-walk intervals on this hill. And so then when you do hit flat ground, you end up being even stronger and even faster. So take advantage of those hills on your workouts. It's really easy to try to avoid them.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think hills have outsized benefits because again, they help build muscle strength and they help the nervous system. Don't avoid the hills. What else would you add for people starting after 40 as we wrap up this episode?
I think one of the other things that we mention in our perimenopause and menopause segments is a little bit on plyometrics. And it's not something you're going to do day one, but it's the same thing as these uphill strides. There comes a point where if you've decided like, hey, I'm kind of excited to see what I can do with this and, you know, I want to get faster, those little bit of plyometrics and even starting very basic and very low key can end up really paying off.
Yes. Oh yeah, absolutely. I would add, don't hesitate to reach out to a coach. I think it's easy to think, oh, coaches are for people who want to do marathons, who want to PR. I'm just starting out. But this is actually a scenario where professional guidance can really, really benefit you. And some coaches are more specialized working with master's athletes. Some are more specialized working with novice. I would say like, make sure you interview the coach, ask them about their experience with athletes in your situation. But even if you just work with them for a few months as you establish the habit, I think it can be really, really beneficial.
I love that advice. And not just because we're coaches, but really and truly, it's been the most exciting thing for me in the last couple of years to see the number of athletes coming for coaching that are in their 50s and 60s and even in their 70s, because it's such a generational shift from what we saw in the past. And I love that we are realizing we can keep doing this for many, many years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love working with athletes in that area. They can see so much growth, and it's just such an exciting journey to help them on.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. Thank you for being part of another episode of Tread Lightly Running. As always, we super appreciate if you will rate, review, and subscribe. Share the podcast with a friend that you know is getting ready to start running, and we'll see you again next week.
Yes, and as always, you can find us at Tread Lightly Running on Instagram. Send us questions that you want to hear featured at the start or as a whole episode. Happy running.